This is Elizabeth McQueen, the host of This Song. And if you're listening to this podcast the week that it comes out, the week of March 29th, 2016, I want to let you know that KUTX, the station where this podcast is made, is in the midst of a fund drive. We're raising money so that we can play cool music and make cool things like this podcast. So if you want to help make cool things happen, then please visit KUTX.org and become a member. Now, let's get this party started. Hello and welcome to This Song, the podcast where artists talk about the songs that changed their lives. I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen, and in this episode of This Song, we're talking to James Petrali of White Denim and Roger Sellers, who now goes by the name Bayonne. They both just released records on the same day, March 25th, and they're also both Austin artists, which makes me, as an Austinite, incredibly happy. I mean, anyone who knows Austinites knows that we are filled to overflowing with hometown pride. James Petrali is the lead singer for White Denim. Like I said earlier, they have a new record out. It's called Stiff, and it has some great album art. And James chose a song that was revelatory for him in a couple ways. It showed him what he could both do as a guitar player and as a musician in the studio. So here he is, James Petrali.
The song that I've chosen is That's It for the Other One by the Grateful Dead. Came out in 1968 on a record called Anthem of the Sun. The other day they waited. The sky was dark and faded. Silently they stated, he has to die. I heard this my first semester in college. Which was, you know, a transformational period just in general, I think, for everybody. I was driving. I was actually riding in a friend's car, and he put on the cassette. I had heard the Grateful Dead before. I'd more heard of them and didn't really have the patience to get inside of it until this song, really. Yeah, we were just driving around, and there were all these crazy textures just kind of like whirling across the stereo field. And it was just a really encompassing, overwhelming almost experience to hear this song played really loud while driving. It just felt, you can kind of tell when you listen to this recording that it was the first time that anything like this had ever been tried in a studio production. There were just different things being cut together and overlaid, different performances from the band that, you know, it's basically, it can be a little bit harsh from a section to section. It's kind of like a suite. But there's just multiple live performances kind of layered on top of one another. At a certain point in the recording, and then this really strange textural kind of, avant-garde kind of experimental thing that happens in there as well. They actually took multiple performances.
Multiple like concert performances.
Concert performances, and then brought them into the studio environment, and combined them with a studio recording, and then laid over different shows, stereo recordings of the same song. So it has this really,
laid the stereo recordings of like the same part of the song over the same part of the song.
Exactly. So they would take that in the on the right side of the stereo field and just like move it over to the left side, and then another thing would replace it in the right side. It's a really psychedelic, like bizarre.
I've actually never heard of that being done. I mean, I'm not a Grateful Dead. I don't know a lot of Grateful Dead, but like I've never heard of really anyone doing that. It sounds crazy.
It is. It's really intense. We actually tried to do it at one point. We had a friend record a European tour, and we came back and then tried to accompany ourselves and then lay in all these shows, and it was a disaster. So there's probably a reason why people haven't really done it that much. But yeah, I mean, I kind of put this production on par with, you know, Sgt. Pepper or anything that was, you know, really groundbreaking studio recording at that time.
Well, and wow, so White Denim actually tried to like recreate this.
We tried to do it, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It was, you know, there. I think there's one song that made it into the public from that experiment, and I don't know if it didn't really make a lot of noise.
What song is it?
It's a performance of Street Joy, where we just took it was basically one show that we did in London, and we kind of turned the audience into an instrument in the recording, and that was kind of like the coolest thing that came out of that is we'd take the cheering from the audience and filter it and run it through some delays and kind of spin that around the stereo field.
I mean, were you playing music when you heard this song in college?
I had just started, yeah. Like I got my first guitar somewhere towards the beginning of my senior year in high school, and was really kind of just digging into it.
Did hearing this, did it make you want to like play guitar differently, or write differently, or approach music differently, or was it more about like, one day I want to record in this way? I mean, I hadn't
really thought of recording so much. That kind of came. This is one of those things that made me really interested in how things are put together in a studio, how like the possibility of that space. But I think that I always just wanted to be able to jam with my friends, you know. And I had a couple of friends, Josh Block, the old drummer from White Denim. We became friends, and I really admired his playing, and I just wanted to be able to jam with him. And the more kind of psychedelic textural stuff that's happening throughout this record made me feel like that could happen really quickly. Like if I learned how to make delay and reverb and all these like textural kind of things work, then I could basically play with whoever I wanted to, you know. That kind of seemed like,
because it's not about necessarily about like technical prowess,
yeah,
playing,
yeah,
on the guitar, but it's about knowing how to make sounds
exactly,
which,
yeah,
is which kind of made you more confident that you could,
yeah,
you could,
which,
do it, yeah.
You know, I think that really kind of steered me into the studio pretty heavily as well, you know. I developed what I think is an ear for that kind of atmosphere, I felt like I always kind of had something to offer in that realm, you know.
Was also part of what attracted you to the song when you heard it? Was it sounds like it got into a really atmospheric place at some point, like,
yeah, well, like, the whole thing is just kind of dripping with it, you know, like,
yeah.
But yeah, there is a moment where it's just basically
like noise,
yeah, like avant-garde. Well, you know, yeah, I guess you could say that.
I mean, it's not noise rock.
Yeah, I guess I've kind of been trained now to not call anything noise. But yeah,
oh, really? What's the deal with that?
I don't know. I mean, it's just kind of, you know, it's all music, I guess.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's all part of somebody's expression, you know. And working with drummers all the time, it's a really sensitive thing, I think, with a lot of drummers, you know.
Oh, I'm married to a drummer,
oh,
so
are.
I do know. Yeah.
So he
yeah.
wouldn't, you know.
So for him, it's like melody never they can never create. I mean, you can create melody can if create you tune melody. Your
See,
drums a certain way.
Yeah, this, but is that, why, this is why we yeah, learned yeah, to yeah. tiptoe just a little bit.
In case people don't know, I mean, often there are a lot of jokes in the musician world about how drummers aren't actually musicians.
Yeah.
Which is like total BS because drummers are probably. In some way, I mean, if you think of rhythm as probably the first form of music, they're probably the most musical of us all.
If you're in a band and you're doing it right, the drummer is the most important guy in the band.
Yeah.
I think.
So you were really attracted to and inspired by... like the not only the way that they recorded it and the chances that they took, but also by this kind of atmospheric place that they went to that made you feel like you like, yeah, I get it and I can do that. And
yeah.
If I can kind of understand how that's made, then I can really put myself out there as a musician.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I guess, and you know, more than just as a musician, like it made me feel like I had something to offer that wasn't necessarily like it's like a personal thing, you know, like everything is valid if you're coming at it with the right intention, you know.
Do you see any line between hearing this Grateful Dead song at 18 and the record that you're going to put out in March? Like, is there any?
I think that, I mean, there are definitely some sensibilities that I kind of lifted from the Grateful Dead's early studio output. You know, the biggest things being like the textural aspects of what they're doing. But I don't know. I guess at the bottom of it, you know, it's like, you know, blues based music. You know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the jumping off point that we share with the Grateful Dead. Harmonic minor scale, I guess, or kind of modal playing, I guess, is to go like. To go way into it, but there are things that Jerry Garcia did that I think are just awesome, and I totally do a lot of that stuff on guitar.
or just like, do you want when you like when people hear this White Denim record, like, would you want them to have kind of a similar like, whoa,
no.
Oh, okay,
this
no.
is this record we made with a guy named Ethan Johns, and he is very much about just getting the band in a room, getting a performance, kind of thing. So we made the record on a tape machine, like a 16-track tape machine. Mm-hmm. Very few overdubs, so I didn't have much of a chance to kind of do the normal things that I would do in a studio recording. Mm-hmm. It's just like kind of hole up with it and see how weird I could make it.
Mm-hmm.
With another producer, kind of in the driver's seat, you know, I would throw an idea out there, and he'd say like, "Go to the lounge," you know. So, you know, like, or we'd be, you know, we also didn't do very much pre-production, so.
So this is more about capturing the feeling of live performance.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is hard to do in recording, and when you do it, it feels so good.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's a very different process for me. I'm used to like laboring over every little detail in the studio, even if we are recording onto tape. You know, just kind of having this meticulous level of involvement. And this is the first record that I've ever been a part of that was just like. Second take, perfect. Get out.
You wow,
know, like,
yeah.
Kind of thing. And it, you know, it wasn't just the second take, but it was like the second time that we actually played it together.
That sounds like you did it like they did back in the day. Like,
way, but yeah. I mean, this guy, like... his dad is Glenn Johns, and Ethan Johns' career is really remarkable as well. But he you know, he grew up in the house with that you know, like the Faces were hanging out. In the morning. Oh. Stones. Like his dad made Let It Be.
What?
And like Rumors. And his dad's one of the most famous engineers of all time, and he's really outspoken about like how records are properly made. He has this reputation for being, you know, pretty pretty hardline about certain things, which definitely runs in the family.
Cool.
So yeah. This the tune that's the single is I mean, that was like the scratch vocal take that made the final thing.
Oh, that's so cool. So it's like, that's so good. Oh, I was just talking to a guy
so
named...
hard to get another take from
oh,
the guy.
Oh no.
Yeah, I was like, can I get just one more? He's like, trust me. It sure is the birth on a saint.
Here, Ha 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 Yeah, the first single off White Denim's new record Stiff, which actually debuted on KUTX. And now you can see why I was so impressed when he told me that vocal was a scratch vocal. I mean, that vocal sounds good. And for those of you who don't know, scratch vocals are vocals that you sing in the studio really just to let the band know where they are when you're recording a song. I mean, most of the time, the idea is that you will re-record them later because they're made to be taken off or, like, scratched. So for a singer to be told that the scratch vocal is the one that they are going to use in the final version, like, that's intense. And this idea that James Petrali talked about, this idea that all sound and expression is valid, the older I get, and certainly the more of these podcasts I work on, the more I wholeheartedly agree with that idea. Before I go on, I want to ask that if you like the story, like the one you just heard, then please take a minute and head on over to iTunes and become a This Song subscriber. That way you'll get next week's episode with M. Ward and Dana Falconberry delivered right to you. And while you're there, please leave a rating or a review. These ratings help us with iTunes, and honestly, they make everyone at Team This Song feel really, really, really good. Next up, Bayon. He just released a record on March 25th called Primitives. I met him backstage at Fun 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 Fest, and he chose a song that showed him the power of openness and vulnerability. So here he is, Bayon.
Music that really changes me is usually like sad, really sad music that has great melody and honestly that makes me cry. Those are my favorite songs and still is ever since I was a teen, I guess. So some of those songs that have stuck with me the most and that have really actually changed the way that I feel, I would start with God Only Knows by the Beach Boys. Something that's just such a tearjerker and just perfect melody and almost just perfect. It's literally a perfect song. Might be the song, best song ever written.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you.
It is a great song. Was that something you heard when you were like a kid?
I remember hearing it a lot as a kid. It never really stuck with me as a kid. I think when I became a kind of obsessed with it was in P.T. Anderson's film Boogie Nights.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like the closing sequence of that film, and it just really brings everything together. It works really well with the film.
That's a nice moment there. It works really well with the film. Bing!
God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, the life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me. So what good would living do me?
Do you think that it was seeing it in the context of that movie that made you actually, like, hear it? Because the Beach Boys are one of those, like, omnipresent, mm-hmm. cultural, it's everywhere, and you know, you just hear it. It's everywhere without really hearing it. But it sounds right. like when you saw that movie, that's when you were like, this song.
Yeah, I think that's when it popped for me.
Yeah.
And then I just couldn't stop listening to it. And it really introduced me into just Pet Sounds in general. Just that whole record is very emotional and very communicative. He really like gives himself to the audience in that record.
I guess I just wasn't made for these times.
That's just what I love about anything that I love really musically is that kind of, you know, really emotional and like almost overly emotional. I mean, I like a lot of music that is upbeat and you know, it can get you in a good mood and, you know, depending on your mood, I guess, but the ones that stick with me are always really sad. I don't know why. It's
well,
weird.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I think our culture, ourselves, we spend a lot of time trying to run away from those emotions or ignore them or, like, mm-hmm. not feel them. So sometimes it's almost a relief when you hear a piece of music that makes you have like a bodily mm-hmm. physical reaction
yeah.
of sadness. It's like I can feel mm-hmm. this.
Yeah, and it's beautiful, and it's it's a good way to just have all those things that are bottled up in our, you know, fast-paced lives just released. And it's like when you hear a song like that that makes you that in touch with your emotions, it's like, you know, it's like crystal clear for a second. You that's what music does. You have this crystal clear understanding about things just for a very short period of time, and you're like, I get it, I understand this is okay, it's all gonna be okay, and then the song ends and then that's it, and then you go back to feeling however you usually feel,
or you listen to the song on repeat
over and
like
over
me,
again
so you can
yes.
feel again
and then you totally exhaust it.
Sounds, or when you actually heard God Only Knows and you started listening to Pet Sounds, were you making music at the time? Like, were you playing an instrument or making your own music?
Yeah, I was definitely making my own music at that time. It was, I mean, I think it was when I really became obsessed with that record was when I was maybe 20 or 21. And I was very, very much in a creative process at that time. I think it was a huge time for what I've learned musically. I think it was just a huge time for me creatively, I guess. I think for a lot of people that age is, for a lot of artists that age is crucial. Like the early 20s, late teens, for me anyway, was when I was like, I'm gonna do weird stuff.
Will I grow up to be a man?
When you kind of understood like what you were looking for in hearing a song, as far as like, I want a good melody and I want to feel this kind of like inner sadness.
Mm-hmm.
Did you then kind of take that into what you were making and say like, I want to provoke the same feelings in other people?
I think it just came naturally. I think it was both of them. I think
yeah.
around the time that I started, I guess, making really, really making music, honestly, when I started recording and putting things together, that was just something that I enjoyed listening to, and it was something I enjoyed making. Overly emotional things, and overly honest, and never being afraid of showing yourself to others. And
so being all right with being vulnerable to others.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Perfect, yes.
I mean, I feel like that's kind of what a lot of people are looking for when they listen to music.
Right.
Because when someone else is vulnerable, then
right.
you're allowed to feel vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's comfort in that.
Yeah. And
I'm not crazy, you know? Like this is all gonna be okay. You know?
I guess there is like a connection thing too. Like it's not just me who feels these
right.
feelings.
Right.
So now you're kind of entering a new phase of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is you're going away from your own name, from Roger
right.
Sellers, and you're going into Bayonne?
Bayonne. There was this transition just because I wanted to have a difference between my folky acoustic stuff and my electronic stuff. And this was a good way to do it, was to have like a name change just for the electronic stuff.
So you'll still do folky acoustic stuff, and that'll be Roger Sellers?
In time, I think. I think that I'm focused really on putting this new record out on the top of next year and touring on that. But, you know, when I'm in the studio or I'm at home or you know, if I'm playing with friends or something, I folk music is just such its roots to me. So I'm never going to go away from it. I'm always going to be making it, but... Bayonne is going to be focused primarily on, I wouldn't say quite electronic music, but electronic instruments as a medium. I mean, a lot of the record that I'm going to be putting out is, I mean, I would say 60 to 70% of it is actually acoustic instruments, but it's the way that it's presented sounds electronic. It's very repetitious and like minimalist and just kind of builds. So it sounds like it was done with computers, but it's, most of it was physically recorded.
Well, how do you, I'd be interested to know how you insert like vulnerability and emotion into music that's primarily, I mean, you said it's mostly acoustic, but like that sounds electronic or maybe is more rigidly defined in some way?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is that a struggle or is that just something that you've kind of learned how to do?
I think that this next record that I'm putting out, it's called Primitives. I was doing all these songs live for a long time, like 6 years or so. Not all of them, but most of them they evolved. And my setup and the way that I do perform is very emotional and it's very active and very vulnerable and showing the crowd your crazy side and kind of flipping that switch. So that kind of just happened naturally. It's not the kind of music that's, not all of it, there's a couple of songs, but that's just heart-wrenchingly sad. But it has a lot of energy and it has a lot of emotion to it. And it's very dynamic. And so it wasn't really a struggle. It just kind of happened. I didn't really try to do anything. I just did what came naturally.
Doing, yeah. Right. You can hear Spectralite by Bayonne, and that thing he said about there being some songs that make things perfectly clear for like the 3.5 minutes that they're playing. I've just been thinking about that and thinking about that. I personally fall down major holes with songs, and I never thought about it. Like, that's why I just am returning to feel this perfectly clear feeling. He talked a little about his live performance in the interview, but really, they are a thing of beauty. Bayonne builds all the music himself on stage. Like he said, he uses a combination of analog instruments and electronics, and he has projections sometimes, and it really is gorgeous to behold. So, I'll put a link to a video of Bayonne performing on the This Song post for this episode, as well as links to his tour schedule. And hey, I'll do the same for White Denim. That way you can see the guys that you've been listening to. And then if you want, you can go see them in person. And that's it. We have come to the end of another episode of This Song. This Song is a production of KUTX 98.9. This episode was produced and edited by David Sanger and me, Elizabeth McQueen. Art Levy recorded the interview with James Petrali, and Jake Perlman recorded the Bayonne interview backstage at Fun 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 Fest. Antoinette Masando is our social media guru. Thanks to Peter Babb and Deidre Gott for all their help on the podcast. And yes, it's true. Our theme song is Mahout, by Austin's own excellent hardproof Afrobeat. You can email us at thissong@kutx.org or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Snapchat. Our handle is @thissongkutx. You can follow us on Facebook and you can subscribe to This Song along with the other KUTX podcasts, Liner Notes, Song of the Day, and Austin Music Minute on iTunes.
And like I said, we'd love a rating or a review. Right on. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.